Off the Ball Breakfast.
Leinster. The atmosphere in terms of rugby, in terms of football, I think is chalk and cheese.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Off the Ball Daily.
So, My Beautiful Sisters is one of the best books of the last year, sports-related or non-sports-related. It's written by former captain of the Afghan football team, Khalida Popel. Khalida, you're very welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me to the show.
Where in the world are we talking to you from today, out of interest?
I am right now talking from Copenhagen, Denmark.
Brilliant. That has come to become your home over the last number of years, which we'll get into in a minute. And I'm really interested in the work that you're doing from Denmark. But just to start with the book, first of all, the decision to write this book, and I guess over the past 6-8 months, giving these interviews, talking to people about some of the harrowing details in this book that comes from writing this and putting it all down on paper. Was that a difficult decision for you to actually come to?
Yes, it has been indeed a very difficult decision because you're putting your life out in the hands of people and you're making yourself very vulnerable, right? So so that was kind of part of it. But also the other part is that you're like telling my story was allowing myself to be re-traumatized and kind of like go back to the memories and to be able to share all the details and senses and feelings to bring to life in this book was difficult. The trauma that I lived and I had to recall it, it was not an easy decision, not easy process, but I'm glad that I've finally managed to tell the story because I don't see this only my story, but story of thousands, hundreds and millions of women and girls who have a dream.
Did you find that there were details and anecdotes and memories that were stored away in places that you didn't even know when you put pen to paper on this? Where had you compartmentalized certain aspects of what we read in the book?
Yes, you know, when it's about your life story, it's like the events that you lived and experienced as a human being, and there's also my story have great areas where it's fun, it's interesting, it's joy, it's happiness, but there is also some very tragic moments and very vulnerable moments where I was in. As a human being, when we experience that and when we overcome that experience, we try our best to kind of like hide it in somewhere where we don't think about it. And we try everything possible to push it back and forget it, or maybe just kind of like keep it somewhere. Of course, we cannot forget that what we go through in life, but so recalling that and rethinking what I have been through was, It was very vulnerable for me, but also reflective for me. I had a reflection of what I have been through and all the injustices that we face, but how strong we as human beings are with all the challenges, the examples I've mentioned in the book, not only my story, but so many other stories of how strong people we are, especially women of Afghanistan. With all the challenges, we stood up together and our sisterhood community was stronger, our unity. And football was just a tool for us to use that to overcome those societal barriers and challenges that we faced as young women in a very restricted and challenging culture like Afghanistan.
And I guess you were more aware than most people about how restrictive the culture was and continues to be to this day, because when you talk about your own background, you write about your grandfather who was a university professor and very well travelled. You write about your grandmother who was one of the first girls to graduate from school in Kabul. So it's fair to say that you would have had your eyes wide open to the world and to the culture in which you grew up. And that probably informs why this book is so visceral and the details are so visceral, that you were very, very aware of some of the horrors that were going on around you, but also the cultural situation in which you lived.
Yes, that's true. I see myself as one of the privileged people, although I've been through a lot of challenges, but I had the privilege of being supported by a very bright family, well-educated family, very supportive family. My grandfather being a feminist, a great activist, who really encouraged us and supported and created opportunity for all of us, our siblings, our parents, created opportunity for us to educate ourselves, get our rights, what we deserve. But being outside in society, experiencing our classmates, our teammates not having the same privileges, that's where I felt responsible for my community. The privileges that I had, they didn't have it. So my privilege become my power, and that's my responsibility to support and empower the women and girls, especially the dream, the shared dream that we had, which was having the right to play beautiful game of football or any sport as our basic human right, to enjoy the moments together, and to have the right to represent our country, which unfortunately came with a great cost to us. But our passion changed our purpose, and it's because of the support we received and because of our unity as women, we came together. And I'm glad that my family really supported me, although they have paid a great cost as well. But they never stopped me for being an activist, for using sport to empower and support my community.
For you as a child, you had to go through the experience of leaving Afghanistan when the Taliban first came to power, in your life anyway, in 1996, or at least took over Kabul. And you moved to Pakistan, you live in a refugee camp for 4 years, I think. Can you talk us through that experience and when you started to realise that sport was something that could bring joy to you in those dark years?
I lived most of my life as a refugee due to continuous decades of war in Afghanistan, where it has taken away our childhood, our teenagerhood, where many people around the world, they have that privileges of experiencing their childhood. We didn't have that experience. Our childhood was taken away because of the war. We had to be refugee, and I started working in a very young age. I didn't have the chance to play with the toys or enjoy my childhood. But I had to be in a market and work together with my grandparents and my parents. It was toughest and darkest, but what helped us to kind of enjoy the moment was sports, and especially in my case was football, because I started playing football with my brothers, and the street football was something that we had so much fun. It was not expensive and fancy game. It was a game of togetherness. We played sometimes. We didn't have a proper football like so many others, right? So it's my story may resonate with so many people across the world, where like big stones could play as a role of a goal post, and something round could play as a role of a football. We didn't have to have a very expensive branded football, but that was the experiences, that the joy that we had, the moments with that game created. We had so much fun and freedom that I felt through football.
Playing with your brothers is a great image, and obviously after your time in a refugee camp, you do spend a lot of time in Afghanistan thereafter. Just because, however, the Taliban isn't as powerful around those years in your mid to late teens, potentially, doesn't mean that the culture doesn't dictate that women should not be playing football. Can you talk us through the first time you realised, perhaps when you're playing with your brothers, that this is not something that would satisfy the cultural norms of the vast majority of people who live near me or who can bear witness to what I'm actually doing on a day-to-day life?
Unfortunately, I mean, the country being through like dark times for 8 years, almost 8 years during the Taliban, that they took over the country. And women and girls were even not allowed to go to school or to have access to any social activities. So people were kept away from, like, women, and women were even not allowed to stay outside. So when the Taliban lost the control, we were the young generation. We were teenagers. We came back to Afghanistan with different mindset because we grew up in Pakistan early on. Many refugees, Afghan refugees, came back. So we came with different mindset, and because we didn't live under the control of Taliban. And for me, playing football in the streets was something quite normal, natural, because I played in Pakistan with my brothers. So in Afghanistan, that was different because still women were scared of the Taliban's return, that may return back, and they were scared of, there was still cultural norms, and just the culture was destroyed by these groups, because people didn't see women for a long time, and all of a sudden they're seeing women going to school, back to school, or playing football was extreme for the society or culture to accept. And that's where there was so much pressure on my brothers and my family, that why they are allowing me to play football, where they were continuously bullying my brothers. They were trying to stop me from playing football with the boys, because what they were saying is that what basically the culture says, women belong to the kitchen. They have to they have to cook and wash and clean that time, and prepare themselves to get married and have a husband. So that's what they keep saying, that I belong to the kitchen. And because of so much pressure that my brothers faced, physical attacks, that they were in physical attacks several times, and they are younger than me, and they didn't understand why they are being punished because of me being in their team. So my teammates and my brothers were so much under pressure. My family, so I couldn't continue playing with them, but then I didn't give up what I tried to do, which was funny and makes me laugh. I went undercover as a boy in a different team, boys team, because there was no girls team, and only the coach knew. So we had the deal, if the neighborhood and the team find out that I'm a girl, then I will give up playing for that team, because they didn't want any trouble from the community. So we made a deal, and I continued playing football with them. And they thought, the team thought that I'm a diff and I'm not able to talk. Until it didn't take long time when they discovered that I'm going to girls' school. There was two boys that they were naughty, and they followed me. They were curious, and they found out I'm going to girls' school right after the training. And that's how my identity was exposed. But I didn't give up. I continued taking the ball to school and said, I will make my team. There must be more girls who like me, who can't play football, but wants to and have a dream to play football. And that time it was passion. It was because I wanted to feel the freedom, and football was giving me the freedom. The window to freedom was football. And it's because in your society, we have so much pressure on you, because you being a girl, because of your gender, because you belong to the kitchen, or there's certain expectation for you because of your gender. And because of that pressure, you want sometimes to just take a break. And football for us was that break, that freedom from that pressure. And I wanted more girls and more women to enjoy that. And that's how it changed to a purpose in my life, and my purpose become my power, to use football to help more women and girls to come together, united, to stand for our right, and to be the voice for our sisters who are suffering from domestic violence, from patriarchal cultures in the country, and where there was so much violence and abuse of power were happening, and women were victims of that. So it became a tool for us, as a tool for activism.
For sure. How easy was it to get together the troops and, I guess, put together a team for your school at the time, persuading the girls in your class that this is something that they should be doing, and to try and overcome the doubts that they would have had at the time? What was that experience like, putting together your first football team?
it was difficult. I had to kind of like go like undercover, try to kind of like have a one-to-one conversation, make an argument and kind of get the girls on board from different age group, from different classes. And I kept saying that what time they need to show up. And then it was like a specific time before everybody was coming to school. So our school was starting at 7 o'clock. So our meeting point at time was the backyard of the school, where it's not like very visible. And it was like around 5:30 in the morning, where it's before the school starts. And so we were kind of like, it is so much fun. We are like, we will show up. So we started like every day I was showing up, and then one and two and third. And that's how the team grew. And we continued playing within our school. And there were several teams within our school that the girls joined. And then we continued to different schools. And then our campaign was quite successful because we managed to have school teachers, and my mom was my PE teacher, which was another privilege for me because I had her support. And so because of my mom was the adult in our team, so she was also the one who was having the discussions with us. So we were going to, for example, to each family's or each girl's family's house to sit with their parents and say, to get the allowance and permission for their daughter to play football, and giving the assurance that it's only girls playing football and the coach is women. It's all safe for us. It's manners involved. So those kind of was arguments, and school teachers, many school teachers joined us in the campaign. So it was a whole women's campaign, and that's how the foundation of women's football started. The women's football was not founded by Afghanistan Football Federation or by any other organization. It was a women's movement that was a joint movement in across different age group, but it was bigger than football. It was never about football. It was using football as a tool to get us together, to have a platform to support our sisters across the country and be the voice for them. And that's how our campaign was quite successful. But also, we have faced so many challenges. Like we were facing physical attacks, violence, harassment. There was so many warnings and threats that towards our lives. People were throwing garbage and stones when they found out that we were playing football. And one of the examples that it's triggering. And I've also mentioned the book. It was when we were playing football in the school, and the school was surrounded, it's girls' school, and it was surrounded with the whole walls, and it was all of us, and we were not wearing any sports clothes. It was our school uniforms, and goalposts were our school bag. And we couldn't play silent football because we usually encourage each other to play silent football to make our voices calm and so nobody understands and discovers that we are playing football. But unfortunately, of course, like you play football, it's so difficult to control that joy and that comes with experience, and you're loud and you're screaming, you're laughing. That's very natural in football. And then it didn't take long time that the man outside the school, they found out that there is a group of women playing sport, and they jumped from the wall and on the pitch that we were playing, and they were threatening us. They were physically attacking us. And so one of them had a knife and took the ball that we called as magic ball, because and the reason we call that magic ball is because it was bringing smile. You know, the football itself, I don't know why they don't call it magic ball. The minute that the ball starts rolling, it brings joy automatically. It's like joy and happiness and a smile into your face. It's kind of like that's the magic of that ball. And that's why we call it magic ball. And they took that ball from us and destroyed that ball with the knife and started yelling
started screaming that we should not play football, and we should not we belong to the kitchen. We cannot represent our country, and we are bringing embarrassment to culture and to the country. And one of the things they were saying, that women cannot walk properly, how they can play football. And that was the moment for me and for some of other players to say that it's beyond football. The challenge is existing and it's extreme, and it's waiting for us. If we don't do anything about it, it will hit us long time. We have to stand together and be part of the solution. And that's how our activism movement started, until we got our league together and we managed to get the Afghanistan Football Federation on board to recognize our league and recognize the women's football.
And that is when the story goes to a whole other level. I just have one other question, Khalida, about your school time. It's a fascinating cross-section of Afghan society at that time. Obviously, as you said at the start of this interview, you were in a relatively privileged position where your family understood what you needed and what progress looked like in this society. Your mother was obviously involved with the first team, but every single one of your teammates comes from a different family where some of their parents, some of their siblings may be akin to your own family, a little more liberal than others. But of course, because this is Afghanistan, there are going to be people who feel the other way. And there are also, there's a gradient to it as well, where some people might be more hardline. Some people may, relatively speaking, again, not be as hardline, talking about arranged marriages and that sort of conversation that you'd be having on the school ground. But there were more extreme versions of that. There were girls who would go home to their parents and they would not be given the same sort of allowances that you would have been given. You would have had situations where girls from your team would have disappeared and not played with the team anymore, which was quite a haunting time, I'd imagine, to be playing football, and maybe a stark reminder from your perspective that not all families were like your own.
Yeah, that's true. We had so many examples of some of our teammates who couldn't manage to get their families on board to allow them to play football, and so they were playing secretly then from their families. When the families found out, they didn't allow them. And they got banned from going to school. They didn't allow them to go to school even anymore. You know, from meeting us, they were abandoned at home, and then they were forced to marry. And there was also one of the horrible experience we had was one of our teammates were forced to marry and she was abandoned to go to school and to continue even having a connection with us. And she was going through mental health issues. And football was our team, and the football was only a place for her to, that she was feeling good and she was having good experience. When that was also taken away from her, unfortunately, she gave up on her life, and we lost her, which was one of the horrible experiences. We found out quite late. We couldn't manage to reach out to help her in time, which will always hurt us, because we missed our teammates. For us, it was more than just a game. As mentioned before, it was a matter of life and so many other things, our sisterhood, our community, and a bigger cause that we were standing together as sisters.
Was that your teammate Dahmina?
It was, yeah, our teammate.
Because there is that in isolation, which is a horrifying moment to experience as her teammate. And then there comes the knock-on impact of perhaps your parents, despite coming from a relatively liberal mindset on all of this, when they see one of your teammates dying as a result, indirectly, but as a result of what's been happening at school and playing football. Does that then shift their perspective? Do you start to notice at home this sort of free environment in which I grew up is actually starting to shift ever so slightly? My parents, my dad in particular, is starting to think about things differently as regards to how beneficial football might actually be for me, or what changed in your own home after that point?
You know, it's just so normal and natural when family and friends and loved ones they get worried about you, they get worried about your life and your health and your safety. So that was always there. The concerns were always there, but for my father, it was he had his moments. My brothers had their moments, which comes quite natural because they were in a very vulnerable position. Because as a man in a male dominated country, you're expected to take the lead. You're the owner of all the decisions, and you're the leader, and women are not seen as kind of like, women are seen as followers. They have to just do what man wants. So no matter if they're brothers or it's a father or there is a husband. So it was so much pressure on them. They were so much in vulnerable positions, both emotionally, but also the pressure from the society. But they had their moments, but they never allowed that kind of concerns and fear to stop me for what I love to do. In my case, my mom was also involved, so of course it was even that teammate of mine was very close to my mom. She had really good relationship with my mom. It was also her student, so it was beyond that that football team. For her, she was in her class, her student. So we were experiencing, in one way or another way, we were experiencing the losses of beautiful lives and souls in that country based on violence. The honor killing is very popular in Afghanistan, and so many other issues that women are going through. So what we were trying to do is to kind of like, the more the challenges we were facing, the closer we were getting to our purpose, that why we are doing this. It's not just about us, it's beyond us and it's bigger than us. And it's a movement of women trying to support the sisters, creating a sisterhood. Football is our hook and as a platform for us to stand united and stronger, to get more women and girls to join our movement, to have a stronger voice, to stop or fight against these societal and culture barriers that were preventing women from living and experiencing the basic human right.
And I think it is important to have spent that time giving the background to this whole story, because maybe some people who aren't familiar with your story, Khalida, might think that it was in isolation that you go ahead and you set up the first Afghani women's football team. It's not in isolation. You have to witness these horrifying things as a child and then make the decision to not be cowed by that, to say, I'm actually going to continue to persevere. Your family has to make the decision, we are going to persevere, despite the fact that not only are the societal norms dictating that we don't do this thing, but we could actually be in real danger as a result of continuing to do this thing. So it's from that base that you eventually instigate the formation of the first ever Afghan women's football team. Can you talk us through the formation of the first team, the first game you play, the support that you have from official Afghanistan, for lack of a better phrase?
The first game we had was the best memories of and the best achievement. I would always call that the best memory in my life so far, because when the whole society tell you that you can't do it and you have failed, but we stood up and we trusted each other, we believed in each other, and we managed and we made it, and we made a history and we made it possible, and we earned that badge and that name and represented our country equally as our men's national team did. When the first time we played our game in Pakistan, it was a friendly game, and when the national anthem was played for us, that was empowering moment. That was the most beautiful moment for us. It was a moment of victory for us. Even the game didn't start. It was just the start of the game when the national anthem. All of us were feeling some sort of victory. And I always compare it because we never played in any major international games. We never played any major World Cup or any of those. But I always say that if it was, I would compare it to a feeling of winning a World Cup, because for us, it was showing together what we can do as a woman when we stand together and believe in each other. And we made a history in our country. The national anthem was played for us, and we were the national team's jersey. We represented our country as women of Afghanistan. All the barriers and challenges were still standing there, but we managed. We didn't give up. We made a history. We played football. It was tough for us because we were not the players with great skills, the way you see how the great national teams are playing with great skills that they have. That time, we didn't have good coaches. We didn't have good facilities. We didn't have. We were practicing the first time when Afghanistan Football Federation said yes to finally the negotiation that we won. The reason, and I want to mention this. The reason we won the negotiation with Afghanistan Football Federation to allow the team to represent and put their stamp that says that, okay, we officially recognize the team, we officially recognize the league, was to give up on any sort of budget that would come to our team, to Football Federation. So they said, we take the budget, you take the right to play. And that's what we did. That was the negotiation. That was the deal with the Afghanistan Football Federation. So we had to go outside and find the resources for our clothing, for our travels, everything we were doing ourselves as a whole team. Everybody was behind it. Even the families were supporting financially. They give us a kind of a football pitch, which was half of a tennis court, even not a full tennis, because they didn't take that, the net, the tennis net, because it was stuck there, so they didn't want us to touch it even. So half of the tennis court, and I'm talking about like tennis court, it's not even volleyball court, and how small it is for a team to train there. To participate in a friendly game in another country. So the Football Federation set us to fail, but we didn't give up. We were kind of grateful. We didn't complain. We didn't really talk about anything negative about the facilities. We just trained there. We kept our mouth shut and not complained, and went to Pakistan and started playing football. The funniest thing that always make me laugh about is that, and I always make jokes about it, and I'm not even ashamed of and or embarrassed about it. When we first time we saw the football pitch was too big for us, and we said, this is too big. The goalpost in comparison to putting our football bag, our bags, school bags or stones as a goalpost, to having a proper goalpost, were way too big. The goal post was too big for us. The football pitch was way, way too big for us. It was a real standard football pitch. And the first day that we started training, and we didn't have a lot of day to train and practice and be ready for our friendly games. And the very little time we had was like we were falling down, and because it was so slippery for us, because we trained in a dusty and muddy and stony ground as our football pitch, and all of a sudden we were started playing and training in a proper football stadium where on a grass pitch. So we had this fun moment. We were laughing, nobody is even tackling us, we were falling down. So that we had funny moments, we had good moments, but we learned how to quickly stay together and win and score goals.
And that could have been the start of a very straightforward story and a truly happy one for the women's football team of Afghanistan. But unfortunately, it's been a bumpy road, to say the very least, over the intervening years. You play your first tournament in 2010. It's in Bangladesh. And I guess on a public level, there's not a whole pile of disdain for the team. Even the president of Afghanistan wishes you luck. He says he was proud at that point. But behind the scenes, and the things that the international community did not see, is that the Football Federation was difficult to deal with, to say the very least. But you, as somebody who wanted to take this team to the next level, to create multiple teams and for the normalisation of the sport in the country, naturally wanted more. At which point did you start to feel the pushback from the men in power in Afghanistan about what you could do with this team?
Right after the first tournament that we played, the first official tournament that we played in 2010, or even before that in 2009,
right,
I joined the Afghanistan Football Federation as the head of women's football committee, or as a director of women's football in Afghanistan Football Federation. I was the first female employee in the whole federation. The history didn't have any other women before me. So it was the whole battle to get in, because I wanted to change from the leadership. I wanted to have, I wanted our voices to be there, the voices of women in decision-making. I wanted to be in the board of Afghanistan Football Federation, where they were taking decision about us, without us. It was a whole battle there. But with the support of my teammates, I managed to get there. And that's where my journey was not just as started as a player, but it kind of moved to more of like in decision making. The more I got involved, the more power I got, but also the more I learned about the whole system and the structure and how we could support the women's football from grassroots level to elite level. So the women's football started growing started in Kabul and different schools to kind of in different cities and even provinces. It started the whole movement of women's football in a very grassroots level. And many women and girls joined football. Yeah, we got our national team players and senior women's in the career in football pathways and career pathways to become coaches, referees. So they were automatically, they got more opportunities because I was there, kind of like created opportunities for them to get their coaching buddies, to go to coaching courses, scholarships with the universities. It started becoming very strong, which was difficult for Afghanistan Football Federation to kind of control that power. And then I started talking more openly and publicly. And media was the second tool for me to talk about the misuse of the power and how actually it impact the life and inclusion of women and girls in the society. And that was where people were not happy about it, and people in power were not happy about it. And that was an alarming moment for people who are in corruption and involved so much in misusing their power. And so they didn't want the women in their families, they didn't want women and girls in their families, in their office, to question, but I was questioning. And that was that's where I started receiving threats from people in power. It was direct threats, and I was attacked. I was followed by people, and it was concerning in so many levels. And the activities, the tournaments, for example, I was leading in different schools it was like most of the time it got banned, it got stopped because they didn't want me to be involved and they wanted me to take down and to step down from my position.
Beyond that as well, the very existence of the team, the continuation of your progress as a team was in real jeopardy as well. Can you explain what they tried to do in terms of intimidating you and intimidating, I guess, the very idea that this team should be able to progress how you would have liked?
So they were threatening, and they were threatening our players to not continue playing. Like one of the examples I had was that our coach that I hired him to work, he was threatened, his family was threatened to, if he continues coaching the team, if he continues working with me, his family will be in danger. The football pitch that we were practicing, it was taken away from the team just because I was not obeying the rules and laws what they were trying to, especially that time it was the Olympic Federation, Olympic Committee of Afghanistan. And many people in power. So people in power in sport in Afghanistan are they, to just give a background information, they are people who are in armies and in military guys who are generals and who are involved in a high level in the government, but they have these roles as well as part of their governmental roles. So it's sport has their own mafia world, and with these guys as leaders, and they have, for example, they are governors, they are generals in military, but then they have this as their part-time or kind of hobby, and this position in Afghanistan, which was in the past, and now the Taliban is now took over and they have the power. So this is how it has been always. And the people in power had many positions in government, and they were quite influential people with so much power. And so if you were going to Afghanistan Football Federation, you would see less of anything related to football, but you are seeing more bodyguards and guards and security people with big guns sitting there. It was just like you're entering a military compound.
Which eventually leads you to having to leave the country for a second time. We spoke earlier on about, obviously, in your childhood having to leave Afghanistan, but the second time you have to leave it, I dare say, feels a little bit more permanent, because this football team is not going to be allowed to play in Afghanistan. You're essentially smuggling players out of the country to try and play. That becomes a common practice until the threats become very real from the Afghan Football Federation. And you realise that if you are going to have a life that includes football, if you're going to have a life at all, I dare say, it's not going to happen for you in Afghanistan.
No, because I was accused of being against promoting non-Islamic culture in Afghanistan, and that was dangerous. It was dangerous accusation. It was so provocative and dangerous accusation towards my life, especially in an Islamic and very strict culture. When you say someone is promoting non-Islamic behaviors, non-Islamic culture, and especially using girls as an example, using women, it's very sensitive. It gets very sensitive, and that's what's very difficult for people to understand, because it's very sensitive area to talk about. So I was accused of going against the religion, promoting non-Islamic behaviors and culture in the country. I was accused of being against the security of the country. And that was like the rumors that are gone around. And then there were people in power who are several times were trying to stop me for talking openly and calling the leaders to take action, which was causing more trouble for me. And my family was attacked. I was being followed, and I was being attacked at that time, which was very dangerous. And so for me, continuing to live in Afghanistan was not possible. I had to leave and the country overnight. Because I was accused of going against the security of the country, and police wanted to arrest me. So I had to escape the country to survive. And I was lucky and I was privileged because of my connections, that I had that privilege where many activists, they don't have it. And today we don't know what happened to them. We cannot find them. Their voices were silent. And we don't know even they're alive or not. But I had that privilege and connections and the support and people that I could escape Afghanistan. And when I escaped, there was travel ban and the police was out there for searching for me. And my family had to live underground, leave where the place they were living. There were so many challenges that also my family went through, unfortunately.
As you mentioned at the top of this interview, Khalida, you are now in Copenhagen. You tell the story in the book of how complicated it was to get your feet on the ground in Europe, obviously trying to become an asylum seeker in Norway, eventually getting rejected for asylum, being sent back to Denmark. But it's almost that time in a refugee centre in Denmark where you realise what the future might actually look like for you in Europe, because football becomes a big part of the refugee experience in Denmark for you, and it continues to inform your work to this day, right?
Yeah. I lived on the ground when I left Afghanistan. I lived in different countries around to kind of like, I didn't know where I'm going because I knew that I have to save my life. And so when I left Afghanistan, I didn't know that if I will return back or not. I thought that I will live for a bit outside Afghanistan, things will calm down, then I will return back. And in the first country that I went to was Pakistan, the India. And I lived in India and underground because my visa was expiring. And of course, they don't have the kind of refugee process. So I was trying to hide from the authorities, but I had also the fear of like they would send me back to Afghanistan. And that was very, I was going through depression. I was anxious and I was worried about my life. I had the privilege of getting visa with the support of a good friend. Now I call it a friend. He was the sponsor, the owner of the brand. It's called Hummel. Hummel sponsored Afghanistan women's national team, our kids. And the owner found out that I'm in danger. And then he reached out. He helped me to get visa to come to Europe. So I lived through different refugee centers in Norway and Denmark, which was a totally different experience. Leaving everything behind and losing loved ones and living in a limbo, waiting for unknown, and going through a very depressive depression and depressive moments in life and being in a most traumatizing places, which is called a refugee centers, where people are going suffering from so many issues, mental health issues and challenges. And I was also one of them. It was very difficult for me, where I was going through depression, where many times I felt it's not worth to fight anymore. And I didn't fight in my life to leave my country and live in a middle of nowhere and called the refugee center and wait for unknown. But once again, sport and especially football helped me and saved my life. Because what I lost so many things in life, and as a human being, you losing an identity is the horrible thing that happens to you. You're someone and all of a sudden you don't know who you are. And that's like you're identified by a number in your card, and that's called a refugee. And you don't have a name. It even don't call you by your name, but by a number in your card. So losing that was toughest one, and so for me, I lost everything. But what I didn't lose was my purpose in life, and that was to use my power, whatever, and my passion, which was sport was my power, and my voice and my passion to support and empower others. And so I was reconnected with my purpose and used sports again to start coaching women and girls in the refugee centers, so we can together overcome the barriers of trauma and depression, and together fight to be healthy and protect our mental health and go through the waiting unknown situation that was waiting for us at the refugee centers. And I'm glad that because of sport and how we created our community, we helped each other. We managed to overcome those barriers. And as a result, when I got permission to stay in Denmark, I founded GALPA organization. And that's how the idea came, to use the power of sport and education, in our case is leadership and life skills programs. We offer it to marginalized communities, to all women and girls in different cultures and countries, but what mainly main focus is supporting marginalized communities, women and girls like myself, to find a community, a platform to advocate what they are passionate about, but also changing the narrative about us, which is told even without us being even part of it. And that's about refugees, the negative narrative around in Europe, how it's told about us. And it's unfortunate, it's unfair that we are judged even without us really having the chance to share our stories, to tell who we are, what we can bring on the table, what resources we can bring in a community to support and empower communities. But unfortunately, it's already told, the narratives, and it's people made the judgment. And I'm not generalizing. There are so many amazing people who have helped me in my journey as a refugee today where I am because of those support. But there is also negative narratives that we want to change together. And Girl Power is, for me, an organization where we can spotlight on great examples of how refugees and minorities and marginalized community can contribute positively in the society.
And if anybody wants to check out Girl Power, there's plenty of information online about the brilliant work that you do. Khalida, just before we let you go, there's one last thing I wanted to ask you, and it's impossible in a short remainder of this conversation to try and sum up your emotions from the last 4 years, I'd suspect, ever since the Taliban has retaken control in Afghanistan. And obviously, as people will be aware, the majority of the stories that you've told us today have come in an Afghanistan that was not under Taliban control, which really can only beggars belief what a young girl like yourself is feeling now in Afghanistan. If they want to play football or even show some sort of interest in playing sport in general, when you think about a young Khalida in Afghanistan now, what's the sort of emotion that brings you? The idea that normal life is a non-starter, let alone the very fanciful prospect of actually kicking a football as a girl in Afghanistan right now.
When I think back, I mean, when I'm thinking about Afghanistan and the women, it breaks my heart. It's very sad to lose 20 years of development, and we sacrifices. And my story is one of the examples what how much we have give up in life and sacrificed for me from sports sector, right? So there are many other amazing people, both men and women, who work so hard to take part in building the community. And all of a sudden, 20 years of achievements and sacrifices gone to zero. And women are and girls are suffering in an open prison like Afghanistan. I continued after leaving Afghanistan, I still continued supporting women and girls back in Afghanistan and the development of women through football and through my organization. And when the country collapsed, that was a nightmare that came in our in reality, for especially for our young girls who didn't experience life under the Taliban. They hear the stories from us, and they were part of the development, the new Afghanistan, the new generation of Afghanistan. They had to go through that, and our players, especially the senior women's national team, the junior teams, that we build a foundation, our foundation on activism, and they continued, and their identities were out there, but their life was in a great danger, which I'm grateful that from the network of sport and football, how they helped us and joined me on the campaign to evacuate them from Afghanistan, and now they are. The Afghanistan senior women's national team is evacuated with the support of Australian government. They are in Australia. They're continuously advocating and being the voice for our sisters in Afghanistan. The junior teams, we have players around the world. Unfortunately, they have lost the right to represent Afghanistan because of the FIFA rules and laws. But we have not lost the motivation to continue campaigning and raising their voices and being their voices. We still have the hope for the future. We still believe in women of Afghanistan. Today, the women of Afghanistan inside Afghanistan, they're fighting for their right. They're standing there, going on demonstrations outside in the streets. They're fighting Taliban, unfortunately, without any tools and guns, anything. They're just standing for their right, and they're risking their life standing against Taliban. Today they cannot play football, they cannot study, they cannot even participate in any social activities. They're even not allowed to talk in public with another woman because they're even ban on their voice of women. They are kind of like silenced, and that's what hurts me. We are in 2025, and a whole generation and population is suffering from this just because of being women.
Do you think you'll ever be able to set foot in Afghanistan again?
I really hope. I never lose hope. That's why we continue our advocacy. We're standing there. We don't want to lose hope. And end of the tunnel, there is a light, and we will reach our goal. And our country been through a lot, and we have witnessed so many war and ongoing conflict in Afghanistan. This is another one, and hopefully we will together we manage to get back our country.
The book is called My Beautiful Sisters. The author is Khalida Popel, who you've been listening to for the last hour or so. Khalida, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Off the Ball Daily.